Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Dan, I am curious what you think the final match is going to be Sunday night at All Out. One of, if not the, marquee event for AEW, although that may be getting reshuffled a bit. I think there's a number of candidates. None of them are obvious, but based on what they closed with tonight, Orange Cassidy, someone who Tony Khan loves and trusts. He creates no drama. It's not just a gimmick. With the international title, with a backstory behind it. Orange Cassidy's beat up. John Moxley, the healthiest centerpiece main event act that they have in the company other than or in a group with MJF and Adam Cole. I guess we can, you know, talk about if that list is longer.
Right.
Going for a title? I mean, did that closing segment with Orange Cassidy talking, that's novel, that's a big deal. Did that sell you on the possibility that they're going to close out All Out with Moxley challenging Cassidy?
Yeah, yeah. And part of it's the way you're presenting it, but I think that's a fair conclusion. Orange Cassidy had a really good night tonight on a night where AEW maybe didn't have their greatest night. So I think that's my thought would have been Kenny closing the show against Takeshita just prior to
his promo. His promo was electric.
Well, there's that. I mean,
you can't headline a pay-per-view if you don't cut a promo on the go home show.
I think you're right. That's why that's just why if I was saying that as of knowing what the matches were as of Monday, I would have expected that to be the closing match. But I don't know what else. I mean, you say there's several candidates, but I don't know.
Well, I'll throw a couple at you. Shane Taylor. No, I'm kidding. I think that they could close with FTR in the Bucks against Bullet Club, and Omega Takeshita were the two. I will throw in the possibility that they just go with MJF and Cole in the main event because they were the main event at All In. MJF's a world champion. It's the hottest storyline, arguably, but I think probably that they have going right now. And, you know, depending on who wins that tag team battle royal, maybe they just go, you know what? It's a weird show. It's weird circumstances. We lost our Punk Starks main event. I think they do Big Bill first, but Punk Starks is fine. Maybe they're going to do Big Bill on Collision to set up Punk Starks the next night. But with Punk suspended and no mention of Jack Perry, do we ever see him again? Or when do we? That jumps out as a possibility, too. So, I mean, they all have flaws. None of them jump out as obvious pay-per-view main events. But what do you think about those other three options compared to Cassidy Mox? Dan, are you there? Did I lose Dan? Or did...
Hello?
There he is.
Hello?
Hey, Dan.
Okay. It's this new headset. I guess I bumped a button. I don't know.
Oh, no problem.
Work bought me an expensive headset, but I don't. I hope I wasn't doing that while I was recording my lecture earlier today. I haven't tested it yet, so you have me a little scared. Okay, so I was trying to go through, say, the 8-man and Kenny and I think you're right, your original thought. I mean, I understand the thought of going with MJF and Cole in the main event, but it kind of draws attention to the fact you don't have a world title match to me, and I don't know that I want to do that. I think that, you know, again, given the presentation, I think you're right. I'm intrigued by the 8-man, but even the way they presented that with a little 45-second, it was good, you know, Bullet Club Gold. I mean, Jay just continues to crush it. But I think it's a singles match. I think it should be a singles match in the main event. And as you said, I mean, nothing from Kenny. I think this is it. And there you go. I mean, they're going to sell how many pay-per-views they're going to sell and go from there. I mean, it's, you know, I've heard this show compared to the We Want Flair 1991 Great American Bash, which I think was in Baltimore. And I don't think I would go that far, but I do see it as like, it feels like one of those WCW pay-per-views where Hulk Hogan set out and he didn't want it to be too good.
Right.
Like, you know,
it's
like, oh, well, this is a pay-per-view, but it's, we're not going to have Hulk Hogan on there. So we're just going to have some U.S. title match in the main event or something. Obviously this will be better than some of those, you know, they let some of the better wrestlers wrestle in WCW on those. It turned out to be pretty good, but that's kind of what this feels like to me. I mean, it's a weird thing to say. I was at the first All Out. I was at the All In. I was at, I think, the second All Out also. I mean, I would be really upset if I'd have went to the time and effort to buy plane tickets to Chicago, get the hotel, do all that I did for those previous years. If I lived in Chicago, fine. But this isn't really doing it for me, Wade. And I love the show Sunday. I'm an AEW fan, but I'm not too compelled to. I usually don't get to see this show anyway because I'll be visiting my mother. But, you know, I had a great time at Dave and Buster's Sunday. I thought about if this was more compelling, looking to see if there was some Dave and Buster's around, I could go watch it. And I will not be doing that, just to be full disclosure.
I really wonder how people feel who booked flights or travel plans, put off whatever they might be doing on a holiday weekend otherwise, and they're going to watch this show. You know, I mean, I believe, and I've been led to believe, short of being able to report it, just based on the qualified kind of hazy way it was presented, that a Cole MJF rematch was going to happen on All Out, that the plan changed because things were going well. They wanted to extend it and not pay off the turn yet. And if that is the case, then they were going to have MJF versus Cole in a rematch with either a freshly turned MJF or a freshly heel turned Cole in a rematch. And they would have Ricky Starks against CM Punk, maybe the quote-unquote real world title on the line. Maybe it gets set up with CM Punk beating Big Bill on Collision on Sunday. This is a big drop-off from those two matches. I didn't know what they were going to do. I mean, I like FTR in the Bucks against Bullet Club, Gold being added. I think that's a marquee special match, but, you know, it also could be on a Dynamite. They probably wouldn't put that on a Rampage. Or, you know, they could headline a Collision with it, too. I mean, Bullet Club Gold are kind of a Collision act. So, I just think if you flew or booked your weekend around this and it was a holiday and you paid top dollar originally or on the secondary market, I mean, you're going to be bummed out. Were you surprised we didn't get CM Punk chance, or Punk doesn't appear in Dynamite? So, you know, fans of Chicago are savvy enough, those who are attending Dynamite, to go, well, you know, we know that. And also the fans who are attending Dynamite in Chicago are probably more savvy and informed than the average wrestling market AEW goes to. And they go to a lot of smart markets. And those fans probably know something happened. I mean, it's all over, you know, I mean, I've been reporting a ton of details and it's all over the place. We're doing, you know, big traffic with people curious about, you know, what happened and what have we uncovered. So, but still they're in Chicago, the beginning of the week, and we didn't get CM Punk chance. To me, that with all those qualifications, I still, Dan, think that's a sign. There's that passion and being enamored with Punk and wanting to declare Punk is our guy has waned.
Certainly to a degree it has. And then also I think part of it's a product of who was out there tonight. You didn't have a wrestler out there that is going to be like, you know, Adam Page or somebody that might, the CM Punk people might want to show themselves to this guy a little bit more. So I think that's part of it. And yeah, I think, you know, I mean, obviously you look at, it's the biggest, I mean, the biggest debut in wrestling. And I don't know how long when he showed up at the United Center, just what, 2 years ago now, it seems like a lifetime ago. Things have certainly changed from there, and we can get into that. I listened to everything you and Rich had to say, and I really enjoyed the perspective of both of you. It's a little bit of the bloom off the rose. And I also think they might've been cognizant of, you know, we're not putting the Bucks out there. We're not putting guys out there that are going to, fire up the big CM Punk crowd. I mean, are you going to yell, CM Punk at, Britt Baker during that match or whichever one you want to think of, or Orange Cassidy for that matter. you know, it doesn't really spark the passion as much, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves. We've got a bunch of people on hold. We're going to take Mike in Hershey, Ian in Tennessee, Chris in Oklahoma, and Nick in Brattleboro as our first four callers, and we'll give out the phone numbers and details on how you can participate that way or by email in a moment, but let's introduce ourselves first. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. Thanks for everybody who's been visiting our website this week and last weekend with the big all-in coverage and all the fallout from it. We've got double coverage coming up this weekend of Payback from WWE on Saturday and All Out on Sunday. A doubleheader weekend, neither show real marquee, like top shelf in nature in terms of their lineup. No Bloodline on Saturday, no Punk or MJF World Title Match on Sunday. But I think both shows have a lot of promise on paper to be enjoyable experiences to watch. And we'll have coverage of that with Greg Parks hosting post shows both nights. We'll have information in my TV reports at pwtorch.com or my paper reports with details with a link to the live stream for the Greg Parks hosted post shows. That'll start about 5 minutes or so after each event on Saturday and Sunday night. We'll also have the special email for Greg Parks' show also. So check that out live if you can. He'll open up the phone lines. You can participate with your feedback. And then those shows will be available to download later that night. Search PW Torch on your podcast app, and you want to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast for free if you haven't yet to get those shows. Speaking of searching PW Torch, I did a 30-40 minute update, a Wade Keller Hotline focus on AEW Edition earlier today, focused primarily but not exclusively on the CM Punk and Jack Perry situation. It was 28 minutes. I just looked it up here. And I got details and perspective from backstage, kind of presenting both sides. I think there's more than just two sides to this. But, you know, for lack of a better term, both sides of the story, because I think there's reasons to be upset with and somewhat sympathetic with a variety of things that occurred. Also, just talked about the all-out lineup and some, you know, some options they have and some limitations that they had. So check that out for free. It is normally a VIP exclusive, the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE Wade Keller Hotlines. It's available free right now on our VIP free sample feed. Just search PW Torch in your podcast app. The multicolor logo is our livecast logo, PW Torch Livecast. That's free, different show every day of the week. The kind of charcoal gray and black logo is our VIP feed. And if you subscribe to that on Apple Podcasts, you can upgrade to the full VIP podcast lineup. Multiple shows every day that are exclusive to VIP members, including ad-free versions of our free shows, and then some of the VIP shows that are completely exclusive for VIP members. You can unlock those within that app on your iPhone using your Apple account. It's a very streamlined experience, and I think you just have to hit the fingerprint sensor and boom, you're in. So you can listen totally free, no obligation to sign up for anything more to that 28-minute update. I've been leading on the reporting on this all week, ignoring things that I was told were not legit that other people have reported, and I know I'm standing by my reporting on this, and I think we've been providing more detail and more multi-source confirmed detail than anyone else this week. So I summarize a lot of that in that hotline, so I encourage you to check it out, and you can also go to pwtorch.com and click on the news link and choose AEW, and you can catch up on four or five stories I've written this week, and Sean Radigan has contributed to the fallout from that CM Punk Jack Perry incident and where things go from here. Okay, so with that out of the way, I want to give out the phone numbers for tonight's show because we're here to talk about tonight's Dynamite and also the development of the all-out lineup at the last second to evaluate and grade the job that they did. You're invited to join us. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558 when you call. Push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear is Dan Keister. He is a PW Torch contributor, usually covers the New Japan beat for us off and on, and has been joining me on Collision and Dynamite post-shows this summer, which has been a fun addition to our expanding rotation of voices giving their perspective on the shows. Dan, welcome back to A Wednesday Night.
Well, thank you, Wade. Pleasure to be here. And it is the night before what I consider should be a national holiday. Missouri Tiger football kicks off tomorrow night, so it's a good week.
Yes, and I look forward to continuing to explore All Out with you. All right, so since we have so many people on hold already and more being added, including Scott from Tampa, let's get to phone calls. I want to let people know we will at least be getting notes from Eric Kroll, who is in the arena right now covering the Rampage taping for us, and he is sending along texts. We will give you fair warning about any spoilers about Rampage on Friday, including the Battle Royal, which is taking place right now. We will give you fair warning, but have your hand handy to hit the fast forward button and hit the 10-second or 15-second jump forward button, because we'll keep it short. But if we do have breaking news for you live tonight in terms of who won that Battle Royal, I will not be avoiding spoilers for that. I just need to know that before Friday night. So letting you know, we'll have that information momentarily for you. Eric may or may not be able to join us before we wrap up the show, and it just depends on how long the Rampage tapings go. But we'll get notes from him as the taping progresses. All right, cool. So let's begin with Ian in Tennessee, and then Mike from Hershey. You are on deck. Ian, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
So I was very intrigued after All In as to how they were going to set up AEW All Out, and I'm very disappointed. I'm sure Tony Khan was heavily relying on CM Punk to defend the title against Ricky Starks, but they're looking for a big marquee matchup. I'm curious as to what you guys think about why he wouldn't have Claudio defend the ROH world title, maybe against Eddie Kingston, to get that feud, because, you know, they keep hinting at the disdain for 11 years. Why do you guys think they haven't been using Claudio to defend the ROH title as the big marquee matchup for AEW All Out?
Mm. I think that's a great question. I will say Brian Koval on Twitter X said, Wade, I can't tell if Sunday is a big Dynamite special or an ROH pay-per-view. Certainly not All Out level. Huge AEW fan been every All Out, and I'm not feeling it. I've seen some other people talking about, I think we have an email too, about, you know, the Taven and Bennett not being well-known enough and big enough stars to be in a match with MJF and Cole on All Out either. So, Ian, my short answer is I don't think they wanted to overload the show with too much ROH content. However, Claudio and Eddie are AEW product. They just happen to have, you know, an issue that ties them to ROH. So I actually like that idea. I'm just thinking maybe that's the reason they didn't announce it or haven't, because they have been hinting at it. Dan, do you see any reason why they shouldn't have done that, other than fair a sense that maybe there's just too much ROH content already with the Shane Taylor match and the ROH?
I love Joe, but then they need to cut different ROH content if they're worried about that. I agree with Ian. I think it's a really good suggestion. The only thing I would say is they're thinking, well, we're doing the slow build with this thing, kind of what you and Rich talked about on your show, and that we're just not going to we're going to build this properly. But I think they already have, and I think they could go with this. And I guess in general, I would argue that Eddie Kingston should be on this show in some way, shape, or form. And unless I'm missing something, he's not. Again, you and Rich talked about things you could do that are kind of stopgap that aren't too much hot shot booking. You could wrestle Ishii. He could wrestle Shingo. You know, there are all kinds of, you know, I think New Japan would probably be willing to help them in a time of need, at least with certain guys. And I think that Eddie Kingston being on this show, given where he is, you know, he's coming off the win at Wembley, makes a lot more sense than some of what they have on the show. And maybe there's something I don't know about that they will add, but I, you know, the way they had he and Claudio, even after the match, it's like, okay, this, I don't think that would feel like a hot shot. They built it long enough that they're going to need to pay it off eventually. And I like the suggestion, I guess, is what I would say in general.
Yeah. Ian, back to you. Follow up on that or anything else?
I mean, you know, you guys are talking about the potential main event. Do you think Tony Khan risks
you know, the Chicago crowd, I would imagine they're very anti-elite because they're pro-punk, most likely. Do you think Tony Khan risks putting Kenny Omega in the main event and the crowd, you know, basically being like a Backlash 2018 where the crowd's leaving early, they're chanting this is boring, and, you know, do you think Tony Khan takes that risk or just goes with his best bet, which is Cassidy and Moxley for the international title?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. You know, we talk about one match, you know, feels like it belongs or could carry a main event spot. Some of it depends on the finish and if there's a big angle planned or somebody interfering or something like that. And those things we just don't know. And that could factor in. But subtracting that from the equation, Ian brings up a good point, Dan, which is crowd reaction. Does that dictate, do you want your all-out pay-per-view to end with someone in the ring who we've seen as anti-CM Punk in Chicago? Now, keep in mind, a year ago, fans were chanting MJF when CM Punk was leaving the arena to his music with a title. This is not CM Punk's town anymore to the degree that it once was. But it still is more than anybody else. And I don't know that what happened Sunday changed it, considering it was, as I keep pointing out, and I'm being very, very forward about that I think CM Punk has made some bad decisions on how he reacted to things. I've had people who are, you know, friends are sympathetic to or consider themselves more on Team Punk than Team Elite behind the scenes in AEW say to me, yeah, he shouldn't have handled things the way that he did. But it wasn't him who started it Sunday. It was Jack Perry with a very immature, ill-advised decision. So I don't know that that should cause more people to turn against Punk. So, Dan, I'll throw to you. Do you think that should be a factor in match order?
I think it might be, as what we talked about earlier, it appears that Orange and Moxley are going to be the main event. And the way they built it, maybe that is what they should do. I hadn't thought about this too much, but yeah, I'm not convinced. Kesha's really doing well. People hate Don Callis so much. I think the match, we'll see, but I think the match would be fine in the main event slot as they chose to go that direction. But you've got to treat it like the main event, and they really didn't tonight. So I do think, as we talked about earlier, it's going to be Orange and Moxley in the main event for whatever reason.
I don't think Omega Takeshita reaches that level. I just don't think Kenny's like this perennial, main eventer for them. I mean, obviously he's a top guy. He's a top guy for them, but he's not a guy you can just put against Takeshita. It'd have to be a red hot storyline for that to work. And I don't think Takeshita and Callis and Omega is red hot. I think it's hot. I mean, like, I'm not trying to bring it down, but it's a non-title match without weeks of build where you announce it on pay-per-view and you really just go with it and go, hey, they're not title on the line, but the stakes are high. I just don't think it's quite at that level.
I don't think this card has a main event. Not a real one. I'm sorry. That's what we talked about. I mean, yeah. I thought, like I said, Orange, I loved his promo. I like both his promos a lot. And so they've stepped forward with it, and that's clearly what they're focusing on. But, I mean, I don't know how many people are going to shell out $50 for that, partially because Jon Moxley is compelling. He's all over the map. I mean, like, if they had Jon Moxley as the ultimate babyface guy, then I agree with everything you're saying positively about him and his potential to carry the load. But I don't know if inconsistent's the right word, but it's kind of like people are going to take it different ways, I guess. He's not the ultimate babyface or the ultimate heel. He's just kind of being Jon Moxley and doing the BCC stuff.
And wishing like 7-8-year-old girls happy birthday or sitting in the front row.
Yeah,
you
know,
I was like, what a badass. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's nice. Yeah. It's sweet, but it's not exactly, you know, character building in terms of his TV character. So
I think, yeah, exactly.
If you've got the Bucks and FTR out there against Bullet Club Goldie and the crowd is, you know, obsessing over chanting CM Punk and booing them, that is not good. I admit that. Or booing the heck out of Kenny when the storyline is Takeshita and Callis or heels, that might enter into his mind. That it might enter into the equation, but I don't know. Like I'm not sure that that's where the fan base is at this moment. Ian, back to you.
I mean, you know, I was looking at the card while y'all were talking, and there's really no clear main event. You know, I think this is the first time in AEW's history that the
the world title's not being defended on a pay-per-view, and it just seems weird to me, you know, like, why – I don't think Tony Khan was thinking, you know, have All In, then next week have another pay-per-view where they're going to have to build storylines for the big pay-per-view for All Out, because, I mean, I was watching the media scrum, and Tony Khan was announcing matches every time there was someone on there. You know, he was announcing Chris Statlander is going to defend the TBS title against Ruby Soho. There's really been no build for that. I just don't think All Out's really been that well thought out by Tony Khan. What do y'all think about that?
As we talked about earlier, Ian, I think the change of course in the MJF Cole storyline, extending it, which I believe they extended it. I think they were probably planning something, a turn. And then also the situation with Punk taking away the main event match, co-main event against Starks. This is what was at play here. So, this is a conundrum that resulted from a decision they made to sacrifice the main event with MJF and Cole, but they didn't know going into All In that they wouldn't still have Punk and Starks. Now, it's Chicago. It's All Out. Dan, do you think Punk and Starks would have been the easy call as a main event with the so-called real world title in the equation?
Without an actual world title match, I think it is the choice. I don't know that it's just a slam dunk obvious choice, but yeah, I think it given that they're gonna cater the Chicago shows to Punk, and it hasn't been proven to be a bad idea, so I think that would be the show. I'll just make a general comment on this. I think they should have done. We've talked about the booking and Tony not getting any help. You know, they've done a pretty good job with the Darby Luchasaurus match before tonight. They didn't really bring that one up much at all. But I would argue that, like, if they're going to do this at least next year, so Tony's going to set up All In, and he's the booker and everything, but I would argue he needs to tell somebody, you get X number of minutes per show. Here's the guys we're using it All In. Pick a couple matches for All Out, and we're going to promote these simultaneously in the lead up to All In, and we're going to try to make those feel special, even though they're not on All In.
Yeah.
Because that's part of the problem here, is that everything is an afterthought. Almost everything. I mean, I guess they had at least mentioned Darby and Luchasaurus for a while, but even then it's not been treated as that. You know, they had their back and forth in Wembley, and that's great that they did. I think they should have. But yeah, I think there's been a lack of focus on this show, a lot of which are the external problems you brought up, but some of it's avoidable if you had someone whose sole focus was, here's my 10 minutes of TV where I get to promote this show that we also want to make money on and have people compelled to go watch, and they're not very compelled to go watch it right now.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Ian, any quick closing words? I do want to get to our other callers quickly here.
No, I'll let you get to your other callers, but wait, I'm rooting for the Vikings this NFL season, man. They got a good shot this year.
Thank you. I will start paying attention to them on Tuesday once we get past Labor Day. I know I've tuned into a couple preseason games, and I didn't know, like, any of the players on the field. And they kept showing Kirk Cousins on the sidelines, and I'm like, well, they're not playing anyone. But I'll be talking with Jason soon about that, and we'll get – I'll get All In on it, but I am heartened that you believe they're going to have a good year. You probably follow NFL before the season starts closer than I do.
Oh, yeah. I was a big Bucks fan when Brady retired, and then the Vikings have caught my eye the past few years, so we're going to see how they do this year.
Awesome. Awesome. Ian, always good to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Mike from Hershey, and then Chris from Oklahoma's on deck, and then Nick from Brattleboro after that. Mike, welcome. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? Oh, Mike, pause one second.
Hey.
I never do this. We have so many people who are called in live tonight, and I think there's interest coming out of All In, going into All Out with the Punk stuff. I opened up the chat room on our studio. So if you are looking, if you have access to the web browser want to log in, the link to that is in my TV report at pwtorch.com. You can click on that and then click on the chat, and you can join the chat if you want. We used to do this years ago every week, and I just sort of frankly kind of forgot about it, let it slide. So just throwing that out there. All right, Mike, over to you. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
Yeah. Hey, Wade and Dan, great to hear from you guys. I'm not I'm calling in. Last time I called in was I was a correspondent from being at Raw in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I'm looking forward to
that.
SmackDown this Friday. SmackDown is coming back and this Friday, so I'll be there. I'm not sure if I'll be able to call in, but it's kind of a big week in wrestling around here. And actually, you know, so not to bring up WWE, so I've actually, you know, I'm calling about tonight's Dynamite, and it's, you know, I'll admit, you know, I'm someone who's been pretty, you know, I follow AEW, but I don't watch it as intensely. But we do have Collision coming to State College, Pennsylvania, in 2 weeks. So there's a group of us going that have never really had a chance to see AEW live, and so I kind of been on this all in, you know, build up bandwagon. Saw the pay-per-view over the weekend, and that's kind of what brought me to the show tonight. I kind of love the show. I love the it's really the Adam Cole MJF angle that's kept me interested over the past the past few months. But you know, you guys are talking about what, you know, what's a main event. And I honestly think after watching tonight, it's probably the guy who's won me over, you know, the most really unexpectedly is probably, I'm guessing just the way that they ended the show, it's, I think Orange Cassidy and Jon Moxley are possibly going to be the main event for All Out this weekend. So that's just my take. And I say that as someone who has always enjoyed somewhat the Orange Cassidy shtick, if you will, the gimmick, but I mean, I think he kind of took it to the next level these past 2 weeks, and especially tonight. So I'm convinced that if that's the main event, I think that they're building towards that and trying to put some stock in. You know, with the lack of world championship, I think they're probably looking at the international championship and a really popular character and a really popular contender, I guess, to challenge him. So that's just my take on the on what the main event will probably be.
Yeah, I mean, Orange Cassidy is I think, you know, a polarizing figure in terms of the slow-mo stuff, but a universally respected and liked wrestler other than that, and sometimes because of that, you know, people like him, but sometimes it's despite that aspect. But I think everybody understands what a good worker he is and you know, how hard he's worked, and they've you know, made him the Iron Man for that title. Cutting a promo is a way of telling fans something special is going on, something out of the ordinary, above and beyond is going on here. I need to step up. This show needs me to step up. And, you know, Moxley is a reliable top-tier star, and you can – I mean, just like with Kenny. I mean, you can drop Kenny into a main event and you know, get away with it. Dan, anything else you want to add based on what Mike brought up here?
No, I don't. I mean, I can't argue with any of it. I mean, I don't have a catchphrase. Catchphrase is pretty great. you know,
yes.
That popped me, and I've had a long week, and so I was, you know, I enjoyed the show, but I've been a little dragging this week, and we had a big day at work, and this, that, and the other. I don't know. I just like, I don't laugh out loud very often or smile as much as something as I did that particular line, and he gave a good promo. You know, building the match early in the show too, both. And I'm glad at least they let Penta have an interview, because if you're going to put it in the main event, you want to treat it as such. So, you know, they did a good job in terms of, you know, building this match for Sunday, even though the, you know, Orange losing was not really a serious consideration, I think, for anyone that knows what's going on, as much as I like Penta, and they did a good job tonight with it.
Yeah. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, you know, if the rest of the show, I don't know, again, I don't know how they're going to book this and stack the matches, but, you know, Kenny Takeshita, like, I think you guys have said it all. I mean, it's going to be a great match, but I just don't know that Takeshita and no belt on the line is really main event worthy at this point. You know, the Don Callis storyline Don's pretty entertaining. I'll give him that. I mean, he is a reason to watch. I'm not sure if that scar, maybe you guys have an opinion on this, but I mean, I feel like that scar keeps changing colors every week. I don't know if they're embellishing
weird.
That a little
yeah.
bit. Yeah. But
yeah,
it, I mean, it's a hideous scar.
Bigger than I remember. Yes. It's a badge of honor for Callis. I mean, he's got no hair, so now there's something to look at up there. And, I mean, it happened in sort of, you know, a funny way. I mean, you don't want your battle scar to be, you know, a lighting grid falling on you and slicing the opener. But, you know, I think he's okay with it. But it is distinct, you know, it's a villain. It's a trademark, you know, Marvel comic villain, you know, facial feature at this point for him. And, you know, if there's a bobblehead of him or a action figure or, I don't know, whatever would depict his image, that's always going to be there now. You know, you can't draw down Callis or do an image of him and not have that scar now. But I did notice today it looked different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, sure. You know, just a couple of things, just thinking about, obviously it's, you know, nothing, and I will say this, I just don't think anything Ring of Honor, I respect it. I understand there's a legacy there. It's not something I was ever into. It's something I was aware of, but I really just don't get excited about anything Ring of Honor. So none of those matches to me are, you know, a draw really to buy a pay-per-view with. And it's just, that's the part of the
MJF and Cole. Mike,
you know,
I mean, are you intrigued to see them tag again? I mean, despite the titles are what the titles are, but it adds a little something to it. I agree with you. I'm not too into the actual titles, but it does give them more of a reason to stay together.
No, if it's a means to an end of keeping this thing going, then I'm all for it because I do think it's something that keeps interest week to week. And yes, I mean, eventually, I've heard people, you know, in some kind of way, even if not completely seriously, you know, relate to say that, you know, the MJF and Cole storyline is sort of AEW's ongoing long-term attempt at a, you know, kind of matching the bloodline momentum of, and I can maybe agree with that at least it's a little sort of long-term, you know, storytelling, then I'm all for it. I don't know where that goes. But yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's a way to keep that dynamic going for at least a few more weeks. So yeah, in that respect, I'm all for it. I'm all for the ROH, you know, tag titles.
Mike, do you want to be on the call when we reveal who won the Battle Royal, or are you watching Rampage?
You know, I'm not watching it, Wade. Yeah, I'm actually not.
So
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. I have like two more points, and I'll let you get to some other callers, just real quick things.
But here, I want to get your thoughts on who won the Battle Royal, because you said you're a fan of MJF and Cole. And since we're talking about it, I got word from Eric Kroll.
Breaking news.
So anybody who doesn't want to know, you've got your five-second warning to hit fast forward. Actually, I had fast forward a few times. So we're going to talk about it now. So you've had your warning. Dark Order. Dark Order have won the tag team battle royal. So we're getting, as Eric Kroll calls it, a comedy match with MJF and Cole at the pay-per-view. How do you feel about that, Mike?
Yeah, I think I have two words for you, Wade. I think double clothesline. If maybe that's one hyphenated word. I'm not sure. It doesn't make me
good point. Yeah,
it doesn't really excite me for it. But I mean, it'll be entertaining. Because it's an entertaining act going on right now, but I expect that, you know, it's just so strange. I thought there was something building towards with this real world championship that would eventually, you know, here we'd start getting some more hints or a little bit of expectation. Yeah. Maybe we'd see, you know, Punk, you know, working his way into this. But at this point, who knows, right? So.
Well, I mean, that's a thing. I mean, they're suspended, you know. I don't know for how long. I don't know if we'll ever know for how long. It might be open-ended, pending more investigations or apologies or, you know, Tony Khan getting a read of the, you know, a lay of the land in terms of how Jack Perry and Punk handled the fallout from this. But I don't know how long they're going to be gone, and AEW doesn't typically announce the length of suspensions other than Ricky Starks, and they even got that wrong by 2 days. So I don't know as far as that goes. But
I was going to say Ricky Starks may be suspended for 30 days again. Doesn't seem like he's going to be wrestling Sunday, so maybe he is suspended for 30 days after all.
They're going to add to this all-out card at Collision. It's just, you know, it's a very, very late to add to it, but I wouldn't be shocked if Stark ends up wrestling, but I don't know I haven't thought through. So, you know, who would be you know, I mean, they might headline a pay-per-view now. But to me, this seems to more likely, and Dan, you agree with me, move MJF Cole into maybe the opening match position, kind of like, you know, they were on the pre-show on Sunday and at Wembley.
Yeah, although I am probably a little higher on Dark Order than most people. I you know, I've seen John Silver really show up and do some good stuff, but yeah, it's not. I guess I don't hear that and think much differently in the match than I did 20 minutes ago. I didn't see who was in that match that was going to be over. But yeah, they're not going to be in the main event, obviously.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, you say obviously, but I mean, it could be a little, you know, golden watch moment for Dark Order. We got nothing great and obvious, so let's just give Dark Order a main event. You know, I mean, the Hardys were in the Battle Royal, Action Andretti and Darius, I wonder if Butcher and the Blade, or I can't remember. There's like people I hardly recognize on this. In
I do think
I'm
the best
at.
Friends were in there. That's kind of who I thought might have won.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they are, yeah.
Marquee value when I saw the photo. But I'm okay with the choice given the options.
Yeah, yeah, there wasn't exactly Marquee list. So, Mike, got back to you for – I know you said you had a couple other points. You can follow up on that, too, if you want.
Yeah, just one last thing. And I just wanted to make a note that I thought that, you know, Eddie Kingston, he's another character that, he, you know, I guess it takes a little bit of getting used to, you know, for someone who's developed over the past few years. And certainly, I mean, he's a likable guy. He's, you know, he's intense. He's got the mix, you know, of what you want. And you know, as a tough, hard-nosed, baby-faced, blue-collar character. But, I mean, I personally like Eddie Kingston, but I've never really taken him too seriously. I think maybe I just fall into that category of kind of taking a look at the guy and, you know, how he dresses and, you know, maybe his physique is not exactly the most intimidating, but he's a brawler, and I like that. But I will say, I don't know what it was. Maybe you guys have an opinion on this, but I think his tour of Japan and this momentum that he's got going now in the match tonight. I thought the match tonight against Yuta was outstanding. There was a little bit of you know, there's a little bit, and so I mean, I'm an Eddie fan at this point. I thought it was probably the best Eddie Kingston match I've ever seen, and that's, you know, coming from someone who's seen a bit of it. But I also think that there was some intrigue there with Claudio at the end, the way that he, you know, had the stone face stare and never looked at Kingston in the eyes and walked around and picked up his, you know, his guy, walked him out. Eddie was standing there jawing at him. I think it's another storyline. I know that they have history, and it's something that will keep me tuning in again. So I don't know what we're going to get again. I'm going to go see AEW for the first time when it's up at Penn State here in a couple of weeks. Very on the fence right now about, you know, if there's no Punk, you know, that it's going to kind of, you know, certainly got tickets, you know, weeks ago, and we're expecting a CM Punk show. Is Punk even going to be there at this point? So I'll be curious to see where some of these other storylines go, but I am on the fence, I guess, at this point about whether or not the build to this is going to make me, you know, dish out another $50, or maybe so I'll just end up watching clips, you know, on Monday morning. So that's it, guys. That's all I had. Yeah. Great,
Mike. I do think you'll really enjoy the live event experience, given just kind of the way you sound about what you like about wrestling. People that aren't too into the pyro and the glitz and the glamour that like kind of a good presentation of solid wrestling, I've always really enjoyed the AEW experience, whether it be at the pay-per-view or at the TV tapings. And they do a good job of keeping the crowd engaged and doing things during the commercials or just wrestling, you know, which they don't do as much of, at least in WWE in general. But I think it's a pretty quick 2 hours or however long if you stay for the other matches. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, I'm not definitely not down on it. I'm definitely not going. So, I'm looking forward to it. So, cool.
All right, very good. Mike, great hearing from you. If you are able to send us any notes from any of these things you attend, we can pass that along to you if you can't call us. You can do it by email if anything jumps out to you. Thanks so much. Right. Stay in touch.
Yep.
All right, we're going to go to Chris in Oklahoma and then Nick in Brattleboro after that. Chris, thanks for calling, VIP member. Welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, I want to thank you and Dan. It's been interesting hearing the conversations with the callers. Something that really stuck out to me is one time whenever they were mentioning where they were at, and I can't remember. One of them said, "We're in the outskirts of Chicago." Just the way they said it. Seemed like, okay, we don't want to mention we're in Chicago. We don't want to get anything going. We don't want to get CM Punk chant going or anything like that. We're on the outskirts of Chicago. Like, okay, they're like disgusted to be there now after the fact, after everything that happened. I don't know if you caught on to that or if it's just something maybe I misheard it or something, but just the way it sounded is like, okay, We don't want to bring any attention where we're at or anything like that because we don't want to get anything brewing. And that's my first.
Well, they were in Schaumburg, were they not, Wade?
Say that again.
They're in Schaumburg. They're at the Now Arena tonight, correct?
Yeah, they said Chicago, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that is technically accurate, I guess. It's not downtown Chicago or anything. So I didn't catch it. Chris, I didn't pick up on that myself, and it is technically accurate. So I don't know, Wade. What do you think?
I was checking a text, so remind me, Dan, or not, just tell me, Dan, what Chris said quick.
Oh, he was mentioning that they said they were in the outskirts of Chicago, maybe trying to downplay the Chicago part of it to keep the punk crowd quiet.
I don't think so. I don't think that factor in. I think they just are trying to be geographically accurate. But I mean, I can't rule out there might have been some other motivation.
And Wade, I was listening to yours and Rich Band's comments about the everything going on with the punk and Perry thing, and you mentioned something that really kind of caught my interest when you talked about, you know, Kevin Nash coming in as maybe, you know, kind of the warden to the whole thing.
Yeah,
and. Yep. I was literally laughing my head off thinking of Kevin Nash having to separate them and everything like that. I'm like, oh, gosh. But that being said, do you think anyone inside the company could play that role besides someone in the company would be able to do that besides, you know, having to bring someone in from the outside?
Yeah, I mean – you know, if Samoa Joe retired, I think he would have the respect of his peers and, you know, not put up a BS and kind of stand up for Tony Khan as his enforcer / deputy / bad cop. Dan, what do you think of the Kevin Nash reaction, Rich fans' reaction to my suggesting Kevin Nash maybe could be a guy who would be a little bit of a filter and you know, letting some of the younger wrestlers know and some of the veterans know lay the law down when things get out of hand, mistakes are made. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Rich just kind of warming up to that more and more as the conversation went on was incredibly entertaining, radio / podcasting, I'll say that. Yeah, I mean, they need a serious person. And they kind of need a serious person. I mean, the Kevin Nash thing is, for all his BS stuff that he did in the day, like, he also is not going to really love the kind of elite snarkiness.
Right.
And
snarky as he's been. I mean,
yeah.
Kevin, Dan, he might have to be a hypocrite in order to be an effective enforcer. But, you know, Kevin, I mean, I did a 7-hour torch talk with him 15 years ago. And he's like, yeah, we made a lot of mistakes. There's things I wouldn't do now. I mean, he's owned up to that. Grown from it. So, you know, he would have that experience, go, hey, I know what it's like, guys, to want to go out there and issue a receipt, but let's not be WCW. Let's be better than that. I want to be better than that now. You know, like, he could make that speech, and I think it would resonate.
Yeah, and they need more serious people there, frankly. I mean, they just do. I mean, like, and but again, no one is going to be effective unless what they say goes. If they get their legs cut under them from Tony, whoever it is, we've talked about this before. I mean, you know, I teach classes of 200 people, and people are like, well, don't you have people acting up? And I never do. Like, I don't worry. Like, people worry about that stuff. Like, oh, it's going to be so bad to manage your classroom. And K-State students were named the friendliest in the country by the Princeton Review. So that's part of it. I get it. But, like, it's also just, you set expectations. I said this a couple weeks ago. You set expectations and you live up to them. You don't deviate from that, and things take care of themselves pretty well in life. In AEW, I mean, part of it's the personalities inside, but again, a lot of it's Tony. And I don't know. I mean, I think Jericho could do it after his injury career is over, based on the way he's, you know, again, done some good things within the company. And I think that was talked about by you and Rich also.
Chris, does anybody come to mind for you that maybe we haven't thought of or mentioned?
No, and honestly, you know, person that really comes to mind, is actually, and you may think I'm crazy, is Eddie Kingston.
Oh, sure.
Because he's
yeah.
been around
yeah.
for long enough.
Yeah.
And he knows
the downside
what, I mean,
was Eddie. The downside about Eddie is just he wasn't in a nationally televised company on top, drawing money for a long time. And I think Kevin Nash and Samoa Joe check that box. And I think there's some people who would question. I think Eddie Kingston, if he has four more really good years in AEW, Dan, might
yeah.
be, mm-hmm. you know, someone you would think might mature into that position with a resume to do it. I just don't know that his resume and his experience is – and even his approach, it just might be a little too gruff.
Okay.
Right. And
can I throw one more name out of L?
Sure.
What
sure.
if by some wild card that Tony Khan pulls out is that he signs Adam Copeland to AEW in that capacity?
Hmm. Yeah.
That's a good one, actually. That's a pretty good one.
Who wants to be a jerk to Adam Copeland? You know
exactly.
what I mean? Like, yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. That's a good addition to the conversation.
I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that will happen, but it makes sense to have someone like that because I don't think anyone would want to do that to him and treat him like that. And it could be the in between Tony Khan and
sure.
you know the locker room. It's
yeah.
just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suggestion, and that's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
Both
yeah.
of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the other thing was, let's see, I had one more point, but I kind of lost it in the talk. But I was going to say that I have enjoyed the podcast. I'm listening to about four different podcasts in one day. Thanks, Leon. I do appreciate it.
Awesome, Chris. Thank you. Appreciate it. I appreciate your VIP membership.
Thank you. Yes.
Yep, you bet. Take care. Yep. Okay, so up next, we got Nick in Brattleboro, and then we got Christopher calling from Chicago, and I believe we also have Ashley on hold. So a lot more to get to here. Nick, welcome to the show. What is on your mind about tonight's Dynamite?
Good evening, Wade and Dan. How you doing? I wanted to pick up on Mike's last point is I'm, you know, kind of in this, am I going to pay another $50 for the pay-per-view?
Yeah.
I'm leaning a little towards it because I haven't been to a movie in 3 years. So my entertainment budget is available, but there's a couple of matches
Barbie,
I'd like
though.
To,
like everyone
oh, okay. I'm holding out for it to come to stream.
Totally understandable.
I think Dune 2 is going to be. I'm going to break my streak. I think I'm going to go see that
That's
in the theater. Just
the
yeah,
colors
I mean,
in Barbie are so vibrant. It's like such a other world. Like seeing it with that really big sound system and a gigantic screen. It does seem like it might be worth. If you're interested at all. Movie, and I mean, I thought it was.
Oh yeah, oh no, I've heard. I mean, it's Warner Brothers' biggest grossing. I mean, it saved Warner Brothers because The Flash was so bad. It basically and just to bring this up, I'm really surprised they aren't doing a tie-in with The Acclaim and The Pink. It's
right,
the same company. They do Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They can't have Barbie walk out on stage and go, "Hi, boys, scissor me."
Maybe we're headed that way.
You know,
maybe the pink belts are a ploy to get
there. You go.
Yeah, get that to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's. I mean, I gotta say, is it the whole segment was really silly, and yes, it was stupid. But I sat there with a grin on my face through the whole thing. It was just the belts, and then they're running around the audience. I was just smiling, you know. And it's just, yes, it was stupid and silly, what are your thoughts on it?
I was going to say, I'm with Taz. He goes, "We just saw history made." I don't know what that history is, but we just saw it. Taz picked his spots well, and he's funny, always funny.
Taz is
Taz is one, the one from Taz tonight, Roderick Strong. He's such a good friend. And I'm not doing it justice because sometimes it's the way he delivers the thing. And
he's a New Yorker. What do you want? You know?
I mean, I think he's great. I mean, but when he delivers something deadpan like that, it gets to me.
I love deadpan.
Yeah.
I got that one. That was very good.
I'm glad you did. I was hanging in there for a second. Yes. I wrote in my report that I'm with Taz, but boy, did everybody seem to be having fun there. It's fine. I mean, they're doing what they're doing, and they're doing a good job with what they're doing. And Max Caster's raps are fun, and Bones brings out the energy, and Billy Gunn has this completely unexpected chapter of his career that fans are totally into. And I just still can't believe, you know, "Oh, Scissors Me Daddy" is something crowds are singing across the country. I mean, I just don't know what to make of it, but you said it right, Nick. People are having fun with it. I'm not going to argue with it. I don't think it does any harm in its place on the.
Who can argue with Billy Gunn in a white jump in a pink jumper? I mean, come on, that's so British.
Yeah. Good point. All right. What else?
The other thing is, and I'm just going to rant on the whole women's thing. I mean, they have. It seems like if you just look at the match tonight, you know, and then you think about the Outcast people, you've got some, some solid talent there, and just Statlander, who I think is great and is impressive and powerful, and you know, 10 times more so than Raquel and on that other people. And yet she has no character, except she learned how to do American Sign Language, and somehow she forgot she's an alien. But, I mean, she's a champ, but she's got no character. It just, she's bland, and I'm sad about that.
Yeah, Dan, what do you think about Statlander?
I mean, she's performing pretty well in the ring, but yeah. That's right. I mean, she has no character. And that's some of the problems when you go with that over the top silliness that she was some boop alien that I forget what the thing was, touch her nose or some darn thing. It never really meant anything. It was too cute for TV then, and they're paying the price now.
Yep.
And they should be.
Indie clubhouse nonsense that they do to pop the back and tip a hat to their core group who watched 150 people on the indie scene or 1500 people on the indie scene who knew about it, you know, in the early days. And it's like, come on, you got to introduce it and frame it to the national audience. It's Bush League.
Let me one second here, Nick. They need to do some vignettes with her. Right. Cause it's exactly like, I don't know. It's kind of like they put her out there kind of as an afterthought because she doesn't have a character really. And they just need to, and if she doesn't take to them, then that's on her. But, you know, you talk about investing in women's division. She is wrestling really well, and that part of it's compelling. and she is strong, and she's got some things there that a lot of women can't do. So, you know, pick a lane, get a character that people might be interested in other than generic champion that used to be an alien, and try. Because right now, there's, you know, it's hard to get too excited about her character.
This is what David Brent wrote in his Collision Hits and Misses on her promo on Collision on Saturday, this weekend. Statlander is the epitome, and this is on PWTorch.com. David Brent does the hits and misses for that show. Statlander is the epitome of someone who needs a manager. She has everything you want in a wrestler except the gift of gab. She has an intense look. She moves well in the ring. She's good at facial expressions. Sadly, however, she can't talk. And having her cut promos in a traditional setting is setting her up for failure. This goes to your thing, Dan, about a vignette where you can pre-record, redo, retake. Do they not have an acting coach in AEW? They should get an acting coach. Not everyone's going to be naturally good at promos. While it's true you can't teach charisma, you can at least teach adequacy. For example, Kurt Angle was awful at the beginning of his career, but with enough practice and guidance, he quickly learned to be more than passable. Yeah, he was fantastic, actually. This isn't complicated, and it doesn't have to be hard or expensive. There's a lot of wrestlers in AEW who are good at cutting promos. All you need to do is find one and set up a promo class.
Well,
go ahead, Dan.
I watch Being the Elite, for better or for worse, and she has had moments on Being the Elite. Some of them are stupid, the alien stuff, but sometimes when she was beating up Wheeler Yuta, or doing whatever. I mean, she showed personality. She's not some blob person that cannot emote and be likable. I've seen enough of her to know that she has it in her, but again, that's where the vignette comes in. That's where everything has to be a backstage interview. You can do a personality profile. You can do whatever, and it could work with her. I think there's a lot there if they did something that made her more compelling.
Well, it was similar with Shayna Baszler when she was on NXT. Her in-ring work, the promo was terrible and stuff. And then I remember vividly they did a sit-down with her, not a promo sit-down, but an interview sit-down, and she came across great. And, you know, I totally agree with what Dan is saying. And it's the whole indie stuff is the only one who's really seems to have pulled it off is Orange Cassidy. I mean, even the Bucks, I don't think, pull off their indie shtick. I mean, they're very vibrant to watch, but their shtick is, except for there was that brief 6 months where they really dove in on the heel thing with the outfits and the sneakers and the headbands. And they really developed
Nick felt
a character.
Really engaged
and then
at that point.
They come across like an image of themselves on AEW TV, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're just. I mean, if I was to run into them when they were younger, I would just have said, okay, these guys are just a bunch of punks. I mean, they have that attitude that is like, listen, to a 66-year-old man, it comes across as a, come on, guys. Do something with your life. One last point I wanted to make just on the CM Punk stuff, and it seems like both people were at fault between the two of them, but I'm sorry, twice as old as Jungle Boy, or excuse me, Jack Perry, CM Punk needs to know better. And I just tie it back to, since we're approaching football season, is you're so right. In a football locker room, now these guys go out and practice and actually hit each other for 3 hours in the burning sun, and there's fights. But then they get into the locker room, and whoever that locker room leader is on the Giants back when, it was Harry Carson, he would pull them aside and say, okay, guys, we got the Vikings this weekend. It's over, right? You know, and they ask, yes, Harry, I don't know how you argue with a 250-pound monster who was a middle linebacker, but, you know, that's the point. But then for him to act up, from what I've read, with Tony, after Tony has cut him slack after slack after slack, again, that's just something a 45-year-old man should know better. I mean, I would never yell at my general manager at ABC and you know, and say they're, I mean, you know, I might go grumble to other people, but I would never say it to them in front of somebody else. I might call a meeting and say, listen, I think you're treating me badly or blah, 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 you know. But I think Tony's either got a fish or cut bait with him, I think. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Nick, I appreciate you sounding off on that. Good to hear from you.
Okay, yeah, good to talk to you guys. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
Thanks, Nick. Dan, we might have time to get your take on what Nick just brought up later. I don't want to keep people who are on hold on hold any longer, so we'll table that for late in the show if we have time. Let's go to Christopher in Chicago. Christopher, welcome. Did you attend Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, hi. Wade, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Great. Yeah, I attended, kept my streak alive since the original All In. I've been to every Illinois show, even the Milwaukee shows and Springfield, Illinois, whatever. And gosh, this, I haven't called in lately, but I was just like, I need to call in. You know, I was a little worried. This was, I've never seen the entire I don't know what you call it. You know, there's the hard cam side, and I don't mean just like the friends and family, but the entire whatever direction that is, the entire western wall of the arena, you know, from stage to back was empty and darked off.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, I've never seen that before. Even going to, you know, Milwaukee, I've never seen that. And, even personally, I was just like, yeah, I was a little tired, and I felt it in the audience, too. We didn't have the critical numbers to make noise as normal in Chicago, but, you know, I think people are also tired. I don't know. I'm just thinking of, like, just businesses. Where, you know, the last 20-odd years of my career, I've worked with a lot of tech companies and growth companies, and it's, you know, the same numbers, the same metrics on the way up mean the world of difference from the way down. And so, you know, the same revenue, the same audience, the same number of whatever. When you're a growth company, when you're on the way up, you know, it's exciting. And then when you hit that peak point and you start declining and you go back to those same original numbers that once were exciting – it's a little depressing, and you just look and you're like, yeah, okay, no Daniel Bryan. Well, Daniel Bryan wasn't there from the beginning, right? And no Kenny Omega and whatever. No CM Punk. CM Punk wasn't there at the beginning, right? For years. I really just felt I don't know, a cold wind blow through, and even just for the Rampage, not to give any spoilers, but you know, as the Rampage taping Battle Royale started, and I see Peter Avalon, and I'm like, wow, I remember when this guy was like, you know, a featured, the librarian, you know, whatever, he was featured, and now he, goodness, he looks a lot better than he did back then, but it's just like, wow, it's, Peter Avalon still, you know, is still doing this, and actually, to be honest, he looks better than back then, but I was, it's just funny, it's, you know, the same numbers, the same cast, the same whatever, back on the way up, you know, was a sign of growth and something new. And now that we've kind of round-tripped and come back to those numbers, it's kind of, I don't know, it's a little, not maybe scary, a little depressing.
We've got about 4,000 tickets sold for United Center on Saturday for Collision, according to WrestleTick.
Wow.
Yeah, 4,060 6 hours ago.
I always sit floor, and I'll be honest, I paid $25 tonight, and my Collision ticket's $30, and these are floor tickets. So, that tells you all you need to know.
They drew 9,280 people on June 17th. They're coming back 2 months later. That's part of it, but a lot of other things are playing into it, too. Yeah. So Eric Kroll is at the arena. He was texting us, and he said there were no CM Punk chants. He also said Tony Khan got a mixed reaction from the crowd. Talk about what seems different right now. being in that home, you know, really the home base market. I mean, there's Jacksonville and Chicago. Those are the two home markets.
Right. I did not hear a mixed crowd, mixed reaction for TK, for Tony. But there was no CM Punk chant. I saw one sign that was derogatory about Jungle, about Jack Perry. I think that mm-hmm. sign made it on the TV because it was right on the cam side.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of CM Punk Cult of Personality lyrics, and then the third line was swapped out, something about Jack Perry. But, you know, honestly, in the Battle Royale, not to bring up spoilers from Rampage, but, you know, Ryan Nemeth comes out in his Let's Go Hunk little tank top, and you know, there's a few of us who started a Let's Go Hunk chant almost just to play off the rhyming with punk, because
yep.
there was nary a CM Punk chant. It was that was telling, I think. And again, I've been to every show, even, you know, going back WWE days, right? You know, you'd chant CM Punk. So that is conspicuous in his absence.
Well, WrestleTix had, as of this morning, 3,520 tickets distributed for tonight's event. They had the arena set up for 4,439 because, you know, they want the fans clustered. They can always expand that if they need to. Last time they were at Now Arena for Dynamite was August 31st last summer, and they drew 6,301. So not, you know, if they topped out at, you know, 3,800 or something, you know, it's more than half.
That's 50%. That's still
It's a big drop.
Look, I've seen the hard cam side blanked off, and you know, they're around the camera, around the family, around the whatever, and then you see like maybe from floor to the top hard cam, you know, that little middle section. But I've never seen the entire Western Wall I don't know the terminology, but so I don't know the entire side from stage to back, and it was a world of difference, you know. I don't know. I felt it. I saw it, and you heard it. I heard it, and also the energy. There was not as many like smart marky kind of chants. There weren't. But also on the other hand, there wasn't a single CM Punk chant. So, you know, I mean, look who came out. I mean, not even the Elite wasn't even out. So it was, it was interesting. And I know, you know, Tony made a big appeal about how the Wembley Stadium show and the numbers were like a second chance. You know, that they had been red hot. I think he said a year ago, it was probably 2 years ago, but you know, they're red hot and they kind of maybe fizzled, but the numbers at Wembley were like a second chance to read, but you did not see that tonight. And judging by the prices for this weekend the news around the speculation around CM Punk, I mean, I don't know that there's much. I don't think they're capitalizing off of the Wembley numbers, but you know, I'm still going to go. Still love the company, but it was quite telling the difference tonight.
They were offering 2-for-1 tickets through Ticketmaster and a 4-pack of tickets for $60 tonight to try to get people in the building. And one of the problems for AEW is fans are going to catch on to this, and fans are going to stop buying tickets when they go on sale, except for the ones with, you know, without budget limitations, and they really are particular about their seat. But fans are going to catch on that if they wait. They can get a good seat cheap late, and that's going to really flip, you know, the on sale momentum that AEW has. So, yeah, I mean, and the fact that Kenny and the Bucks aren't out there working on this big weekend coming out of Wembley. I mean, I know people are fatigued from travel, and you want them fresh for All Out, in as much as All Out feels like a major show. But man, if you go to Chicago, you want your EVPs out there talking to the crowd, interacting with the crowd, even if it's off TV before and after the show. It's not just Tony Khan's not enough, and that's just not the kind of work they're putting in on one of the bigger weekends for this company coming back from Wembley. There should have been a more of a sense of a celebration of what happened. I'm glad they started with that video package, but not having the Bucks and Kenny appear is not great. You know, I think fans are sensing something just isn't this isn't a happening in a movement anymore. It's a company growing and expanding a little too fast with internal problems. And, you know, like you said, you're still a fan. You're still going to get good shows. The All In was a fantastic event. I mean, it's not all doom and gloom, but it's also, like you said, it's a company that feels like there's a decline in the metrics, not an increase. And it feels different when they're, you know, drawing 4,000 people, you know, or less, you know, in Chicago on a big week. So anyway, Chris, anything else you want to add about your experience tonight?
Yeah, well, you know, I was noticing Acclaimed and Pentagon, you know, they both made appeals to a year ago in Chicago, how special it was in Chicago. That in Chicago, that's where they caught fire a year ago. And that even eventually, you know, elicited, you know, the chant that I think, I don't know, from watching television as well, I think kind of started organically in Chicago for the Acclaimed, you know, set to Keith Lee's, you know, All Bass in His Glory. But it was just telling that, you know, these two separate acts kind of like had to make an appeal, like, hey, remember a year ago when we were cool, when we caught fire, and it was thanks to you? And so again, just a contrast.
Wow. Anything else stand out, Chris?
You know, no, I, you know, for whatever it's worth, you know, going to the bathroom, saw Danny Garcia and the gentleman from Private Party kind of peeking through the curtains, watching the Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara act. I don't know, it'd be cool to, I didn't know if they were going to run in or maybe that foretells some new combination in the future. What else? Nothing else stood out because there was it was a little more quiet than normal. So that's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, good to hear from you, Chris. Don't be a stranger. Call again.
Thank you.
You bet. And have fun this weekend. Yep. Yeah. All right. Ashley's been on hold a while, and then after that, we're going to go to Eric Kroll, who has just given us a call from attending the Rampage tapings. Ashley, thanks for holding. Thanks for your patience. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, yeah. Thank you so much for taking my call. Can you guys hear me okay?
You sound
good.
Great. Yep, we can hear you.
Awesome. Well, I won't take too much of your time. I know it's getting late, and you have Eric online. I'm very eager to hear what he has to say. But Nick kind of stole my thunder. I was calling in to kind of semi-rant about the women's division and the state of AEW and kind of like the lack thereof. I missed the first 30 minutes of your show, so I apologize. I was at work, so I wasn't sure if you guys had brought it up already. It's just really frustrating for me. I just feel like I just need to call in, at least advocate for it. But like I said, Nick did that primarily, so I appreciate that. But, yeah, just really quick, I'll just kind of bring up another topic on it and then one more, and then I'll let you guys go. Just, I don't know if you guys are waiting, if you know what's going on with Jade Cargill or if she's injured or what happened. It's just so, like, perplexing to me still how she was on this hot, undefeated streak. I mean, yeah, it kind of fizzled here and there, but she was just made most nights whenever she was promoted on the show and she appeared on the show, she was presented as a star. And there was a couple of, like, tapings I even went to just to specifically see her. So I feel like she had a lot of star power to her, potential to have it. And then she lost the title, which it was kind of, I know, in a babyface way, if you think about it, with her completing the match and then Chris Statlander coming out just pretty much out of nowhere and challenging her and beating her like she did. So just, I guess, long story short, do you guys know what's going on with Jade Cargill, if she is injured, or just what do you think, even after All Out on Sunday, the state of the both championships, because it's pretty redundant to have two championships in a division that doesn't get any focus really at all. And tonight, that was the only match that I saw so far from the show. But it was, had to be, less than 10 minutes, and it was, a trios tag with a woman. It just felt completely random. So just kind of, I know you guys touched on it already. Just really quick, what you think about the division as a whole, maybe what's going on with Jade Cargill, and do you think there's ever a possibility we'll be able to merge the titles just to kind of clean it up a bit?
Yeah, they haven't done a good job linking one title officially with one show and establishing kind of separate women's divisions. And I think having, you know, a focused group of six or eight women on each show that are just identified with that show, with the title they're fighting for, would be a step in the right direction. Jade Cargill's not on bad terms with Tony Khan or AEW. She's on, you know, a break. She's on a hiatus, a sabbatical. I don't know if she just wanted time away to do some personal things or if it had to do with other opportunities. It doesn't sound like there's a timeline that AEW is giving for her return. And she did put out a cryptic tweet that made it sound like she wasn't coming back, and then it turned out she kind of clarified, or somebody did that. No, she is. So they're not being specific, but actually she is still affiliated with the company. I don't know if that means she's still under contract or not. But it sounds like Tony Khan and AEW are expecting her back and anticipating her back, and fans, I think, should assume it's much more likely than not that she'll be back. But I don't have insight onto what that timeline is. Dan, your thoughts on the women's division and, you know, Ashley's concerns about it. And, you know, I was thinking of saying earlier, it would have been great for All Out if they had a women's match they could drop onto that show. And I was thinking the Outcasts and the Triple Threat, you know, had a backstory at All In. It could have led to it, but they went in a very different direction tonight.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is, you know, speaking, I don't have any inside information on Jade, but obviously, as Ashley mentioned, I mean, the way she lost the title was she hasn't been on TV since. So they knew she was leaving, it seems pretty obvious, and they had her lose in such a way that protected her pretty well. So if she does come back to the company, I'm not too worried about her trajectory. I don't think it's a bad idea to merge the titles. I think they could merge a lot of titles on AEW, not just the two women's titles, and have a better focus on each. I do think they find themselves in this situation where they overthink their booking because they worry too much about the reaction they're going to get to the way they treat the women. And so I think it might be counterproductive for them, but they will probably keep those two titles separate because I think it's a good suggestion given where they're at, but they are probably too fearful of blowback to say, you don't have enough women's titles already, now you only have one. I would argue, again, they can get rid of several of their titles, men's and women's, and make it more meaningful. Probably more men's titles they need to get rid of than women's. So yeah, I mean, and again, it gets to be a chicken or the egg argument. I think they need better booking of the women's division. I think there are talents there that have the potential to do better than they are, but they have to be produced properly and treated seriously enough. Toni Storm, I really like what she's doing right now. It's kind of weird. It's out there, but I think it's compelling, and it makes you want to see her on TV. I don't want men, women, you know, junior heavyweights or whatever to be featured just because they feel like they have to put them on there. And, you know, I think that the women's booking is not great. I think the criticisms of that are valid. I think some of the talents are not as good as others as well. And so you have to keep that in mind. I mean, the match tonight, I don't know that I would have had it go any longer. I didn't find it overly compelling. I thought Emi Sakura is kind of an intriguing character. I think she is underutilized. But still, I don't know. I'm probably not the best person to ask tonight because again, it's been a week and whatever, but yeah, that I guess I'm rambling a little bit, but those are my general thoughts.
Yep. All right. Ashley, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I guess, yes, not to be that person. Just really quick to round that up. I thought, especially with the influx of ROH focus going into All Out, maybe you could have done something with Athena and just had a little bit more focus on just kind of showcase it a little bit more, especially since we didn't really have that many stories for the men's side going into it. Maybe just spruce up the women, do something. But I know you guys, it's running late and you have Eric on the line as well, but I just wanted to ask, and apologies, like I said, again, I missed the first 30 minutes or so of the show, but did you guys touch on the announcement that Ricky Starks is going to challenge Ricky the Dragon Steamboat to a strap match at All Out on Collision? And what do you guys think about that? And then I'll let you guys go. And before I let you mute me, I just wanted to say last time I spoke to you, I forgot to mention for everyone to go VIP. It's truly a great value. I was going through my subscriptions about a month or so ago because I'm one of those people who cut the cord, but then realized I had, like, so many subscriptions. So I was trying to redo the budget, but VIP, PW Tours VIP is always one that I'll keep around. So thank you, Wade. Thank you, Dana. Enjoy hearing your insight, too, Dana, and your opinions on everything. So
thank you. Well, and I echo what you're saying about Athena. She's definitely underutilized. That's one that they're missing the boat on.
Ashley, thank you so much for your kind words about VIP membership. Glad we're a priority on your streaming budget. I know how that goes.
Definitely. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Yep, you too.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat thing has almost knocked me out of my chair, Way.
Yes.
First I've heard of it.
Tony Khan announcing on Twitter X that Starks are going to challenge him to a threat match. I don't think we're going to get that match, by the way.
I
think he's challenging him to it.
Yeah,
I think Steamboat will provide a surrogate opponent of some kind. I guess that means Starks will probably be on All Out. He's not going to miss out on that chance,
but someone
else will be in that spot. I don't know. Is it obvious who it would be, who Steamboat would pick? Doesn't jump out to me as obvious.
It's not going to be Punk. I mean, that's where the story would have gone from before, but... I realize that, but I'm just saying. I mean, that's who he was. He wasn't really aligned with anybody else that I can think of. Eddie Kingston, but apparently he's on the card too. I did see something on Twitter about that, which we'll probably get to with Eric.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, speaking of Eric, let's bring Eric Kroll onto the show. PW Torch contributor over the years and co-host on this show often. Eric, welcome. How was your experience attending a show?
Hey,
you were one of the few in the crowd.
Hey, Wade and Dan. That was the flattest episode of AEW television I have ever attended, and I've been to all of them except for one in Chicago. I think I missed last year's pre-Thanksgiving thing. I might have even gone, I don't remember. One of the pre-Thanksgiving ones I missed. Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to give them a bit of a pass when I get into the building around 6 o'clock Central, and I look at my Twitter to see what matches I'm going to see. And Tony Khan basically posted, "Everybody is sick or traveling. We'll have a great show." I knew it was going to be a patched together mess, and it was.
I wonder who was sick. I haven't been around the internet to see if anybody's reported on who's sick. Hopefully there's not like the new strain of COVID going around or anything like that, but maybe that would explain the Bucks and Kenny not being on the go-home show in front of the crowd, Eric?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
And that is going
as
around.
As usual, John Moxley comes out to save AEW in the opening match. The crowd's into him. You know, there was some decent action on the show, but... how did it come across on TV? Just there weren't a lot of people there. There were maybe somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 in a building that drew 9,000 for All Out last year. How did it come across on TV? Was it just a boring flat show?
I didn't mind the show that much, but it didn't get me, you know, riled up either. I had pretty low expectations coming. I should say low expectations. I figured it would make a lot of news, but I also... You know, I saw WrestlePix said there were, you know, 3,600 tickets sold or whatever going into the event tonight. They were going to be under 4,000. They oversaturate the Chicago. They're burning out the Chicago market. You know, I wasn't sure what to expect. But honestly, I didn't.
You couldn't notice from the TV was shot pretty well, I think, Eric.
Yeah.
And it was nothing like the first time I hosted with Wade on here, that show in Canada, that Collision.
Oh.
It just felt like they were in a morgue. You didn't pick up on that. It didn't seem like a totally dead crowd. It didn't seem like a super hot crowd either, but it just seemed kind of like a normal TV show to me, a normal Dynamite, I guess, just from viewing.
Yeah,
they didn't...
Go ahead, Eric,
None of the upper deck was sold at all, and when the show started, there was nobody on the hard cam side in the lower bowl, and the rest of the lower bowl was... full, more or less, but just, you know, nothing like the hot Chicago, large hot Chicago crowds are used to. Collision, I think they sold about 4,000 seats in a United Center that could probably hold 13,000 for Collision if they could put them in there. And I was able to get two club-level 200-row seats, second row, where I'll have, you know, waiter service on Sunday, Saturday for Collision for $30 each on StubHub. So, yeah, it's those are seats that would go for $100 normally. So it is they are burning out the market here.
Wow.
Well, this came up earlier. They're running Independence, Missouri here in a few weeks on a Tuesday night. I'm probably not going to go because it looks like we're going to see the Chiefs play on Thursday. But even if I were, you know, even if I go, you know, I wouldn't get the tickets till the last minute anyway. I kind of think that's the way to get tickets, save money. But I certainly wouldn't do it now. And I think this point Wade brought up, that it's a repeated game in a lot of these markets. And if you discount too much, people start to count on the discounts, except for the very, what we call the highest inelastic demand people out there that are willing to pay any price for premium seating. You're gonna start seeing a decline in your total revenue that's pretty dramatic if you discount, discount, discount. But you also, you have the master of TV that you want to serve. So, I don't know, you know, it's a tough situation.
Eric, add some details to Tony Khan getting a mix of cheers and boos. Our a couple callers ago, Christopher said he did not hear a mixed reaction to Tony Khan. So, do you think it was just in your section, or did he just miss something that was pretty pronounced?
No, it was a mix, right? It's for sure, right? I've seen AEW shows with. It wasn't as bad as like Cody Rhodes. It wasn't even as bad as CM Punk. But Tony Khan has never been anything. But cheered in Chicago, and he did not get that warm of a reception tonight. He didn't come out before the show started, I don't think. He didn't, which he normally does. Usually he comes out three times. He comes out at the start of the show, comes out after Dynamite, you know, before Rampage to encourage you to stay, which is what he did tonight. And I left after the main event, in quote marks, for Rampage, so I don't know if he came back out. I think Sky Blue might have just closed the show with a promo, and she's not super compelling in the ring or on the mics, but she's a homegrown wrestler, so she got a decent reaction. Did you go over the Rampage spoilers, or would you like me to tackle that?
We covered the Battle Royal briefly earlier when we had a caller talking about the MJF and Cole and involvement in All Out. But I think this is a sufficient warning to people who don't want spoilers for Rampage, the Feud of the Proud, to fast forward a couple minutes. And Eric, go ahead and talk about what you saw after Dynamite went off the air.
Yeah, so the Battle Royal was a jobber Battle Royal for the most part, right? You had Aussie Open, you had the Hardys. And a lot of teams that have been defined down. I mean, they had the Wingmen, Peter Avalon and Ryan Nemeth, and the Outrunners, which is a team I remember from AEW Dark. They're doing like a neon tights, 80s, jobber tag team gimmick. I mean, it was not great. It only went 12 minutes. And we've got a comedy match now for MJF and Adam Cole on Sunday, which seems fitting given I am in the Todd Martin camp. I have not been into the Adam Cole MJF thing. I know it's the AEW Bloodline Light. It's just the skits are not my thing. The in-ring, the mid-match dialogue is not my thing. I'm not a fan of WWE and how they present their product. I think, you know, everything is very heavy-handed, no subtlety. So that's what we're getting on Sunday. And then we had about as random of a tag team match, and it was actually pretty good. Nick Wayne and El Hijo del Vikingo versus Kip Sabian and Gringo Loco. Gringo Loco, I think he works down in Mexico a lot. He's from Chicago, so he's probably able to pick up the phone to be there when AEW has, you know, so much talent absent tonight. And it was a pretty good match. And Vikingo hit his 630 senton for the win. And then we had about 3 minutes of a Hangman Page squash win over Brian Keith, a respected indie wrestler who is the local freelance wrestling heritage title holder. I guess they were so desperate. AEW had so little talent in the back tonight, they actually had to have Hangman Page wrestle a match on television, which almost never happens, right? We never see the guy as longtime
coach. Which should be happening more at his age and his value to the company. It's still weird.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, yeah, and as longtime Torch podcast listeners know, I am a big Adam Page fan. So, Adam Page has a reputation, I think, for working kind of stiff, and Brian Keith is a brawler. So it was a fairly stiff 3-minute match that he won with the Buckshot Lariat. I should mention, at some point, there was actual news committed on Rampage. Chris Jericho was on commentary, and Aussie Open was coming back up the ramp, I think, from the Battle Royal, and they attacked Jericho at the announce desk, and Sammy Guevara made the save. So I would assume that next week, Sammy and Chris, as they go on their tag team odyssey, that Aussie Open are their first challengers, and you would assume Aussie Open's going to do another job, unless the Sammy-Chris thing will be short-lived, and I don't think it will. If they're going to do a singles between Sammy and Chris, it probably wouldn't be, maybe October pay-per-view or Full Gear. So that was interesting. And I hate to see Aussie Open, who are a great tag team that can really work. Their characters haven't been defined yet for the most part. And I would hate to see them, continue to be jobbed out in sort of the way Tony Khan is using them. But they're new. It's harder to build a tag team back up after you've defined them down. And then finally, the main event in any arena in the country, or at least the now arena in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, Sky Blue and Willow Nightingale versus Anna Jay and Taya Valkyrie. And I don't want to – let's just say this one didn't exactly solve the booking problems and the talent problems in the AEW women's division. The faces won in the end, Sky Blue with the code Blue on Anna Jay. So those are your Rampage spoilers.
We'll have the written version of that, Eric, posted on pwtorch.com. Thanks for sending along a written report, too. So if people want to read over a little more detail than you provided there, that should be there tonight or tomorrow, most likely tonight. Eric, anything else you want to pass along about your experience tonight? We've got a pretty good sense of how you feel about it and the energy in the crowd. And, yeah, I mean, it's just... should AEW take a break from Chicago, like rebuild interest? Like, should they not go back until next August?
The problem is that they're going to run three shows within a few days after everyone, mm-hmm. A lot of fans just ordered the pay-per-view on Sunday. So, for me, this is going to be, X number of three shows live and a pay-per-view with 4 and 7 days. It's tough. There was only one merch stand, and there was a lot of AEW merchandise. The only individual merchandise they had was Better Than You Bebe shirt and Acclaimed shirt, and then they might have had like a Danhausen poster, but everything else was just generic AEW. They did not put forth much of an effort in the merch stand. I don't know why that is. Pro Wrestling Tees is located in Chicago, obviously, about 30, 40 miles away in the city. Hoffman Estates is kind of a far-flung suburb, but probably could have sold more merch. Yeah, I don't know. It was a show, and we'll move on. And I can't wait Saturday night to sit there and do a Ring of Honor results report. It was the most boring thing back in late June, and I am. But I'll be at least sitting in some comfortable seats. So. That is it on my end.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you. Dan, anything you want to ask Eric before we cut Eric loose?
Well, I'm seeing something about Eddie Kingston's involvement on the pay-per-view. Was that announced in front of the crowd, or is that just a Twitter thing?
It was not announced in front of the crowd.
It says Tony on Twitter said Eddie Kingston and Shibata against Wheeler, Yuta, and Claudio on Sunday, I do like that. I mean, given what we were talking about earlier, and I would have probably let the crowd know about it, I guess, if you're going to put it on Twitter. So that was what came to mind.
Well, they're just piecing this together. Yeah. It is patchwork, but, it's not going to be a bad show probably. It's just, man, it doesn't have space to breathe and and ferment into something that people have time to look forward to. Go ahead, Eric.
I mean, what's the main event? What's the main event? We talked about that.
That was our A block segment, Eric. I think it's going to be John Moxley challenging Orange Cassidy.
Okay. I mean, there will be a title change in that match, I assume. Yeah, clearly. It's so bizarre. You could have just run back FTR in the Bucks in the main event slot, and that would have been fine, right? I mean, Tony Khan always asks at every Q&A, are you going to ever main event with a tag team title match? And they could have done that, but whatever. And Tony Khan wants to do this next year, right? Is that the case? I guess he hasn't committed to All Out being in Chicago, maybe.
He talked about it. He talked about the two bank holidays back-to-back. I think he plans on doing it again next year.
I mean, this is just such a disaster for them. The buy rate of All Out will be one of the most telling things about AEW all year, right? Their business and how it's doing. If they do 100,000 buys for this show, it'll say a lot, right? It'll say there are AEW fans who will order a pay-per-view a week later, no matter what, no matter how mediocre of a card they provide. Interesting. All right. Well, I'll let you guys
Eric,
go.
I'll tell you though, the callers, and I'm happy for them. There's been more enthusiasm about buying this show, and granted, these are people that are calling a wrestling podcast at 10:30 on a Wednesday night, but more than I expected. I mean, most people are saying they're probably going to get the show, and great if they do, you know. But
I think they're sub 100,000 by a decent margin.
I do too.
I've been wrong before, so we'll see. But that's my gut tells me no, they're not going to hit 100.
I agree. I agree. I can't. I mean, again, it's $50. You know, I mean, it's not nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to pay for Forbidden Door. I don't want to go back to that movie theater story again, but still, the show Sunday. I mean, I'm willing to pay for AEW when it's built properly, but I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Thanks so much. Get some rest. You got a big weekend ahead.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Yep. You bet.
All right, Eric, good to talk to you.
All right, let's wrap up with a couple emails, Dan. We'll do it quick because we're running very long here. I won't read that first. That's less about Dynamite. Let's go to Chris R., who says, it's disappointing with follow-up show to All In. None of the main stars and the matches for All Out are very zero-hour-ish. Is the Bray Wyatt funeral the reason most of the stars weren't there? I could excuse this poor show for that, but not to even have Saraya there, who had a huge moment in her hometown, is crazy. All Out is more like ROH Final Battle. World champ in an ROH tag title match. Just frustrated with this company. It's like one step forward and two steps back. Also, just fire CM Punk. He's like T.O. towards the end of his career. When he was catching touchdowns, you could put up with the bullshit. But now he's only good for about 600 yards and 3 touchdowns a year. Juice, not worth the squeeze. Love the content. Peace. Dan, there's your opening. CM Punk. What's your take?
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't fire him right now. Not over this. I've heard all you had to say, and he's not represented himself very well. But I'm sympathetic to the point that he was, he was stirred up and he was pushed forward into this. I think people say that they should treat CM Punk and Jack Perry the same, don't understand the wrestling business. Mm-hmm. Jack Perry needs to learn his place, and he should be lucky he has a job. As far as I'm concerned, I am, you know what, wrestling, life's not fair, and neither is pro wrestling. And CM Punk's a hell of a lot bigger deal than Jack Perry. Jack Perry's trying to showboat for his buddies, and I'm on the Punk side between those two. I'm not on the Punk side overall. I mean, the guy needs to, we can go over and over and over that. Mm-hmm. And it's fine that he's suspended, I suppose. I don't really have a problem with that, but I wouldn't fire him over this because that gives you – I mean, again, you don't want to give the people that are stirring crap up and probably behind some of this what they want either. It's not just simple ABC. There's a lot of hidden stuff here, it seems like to me, and I think you have to be cognizant of that. And I don't reward that kind of behavior. And I think that that's – you know, that that Jack Perry's trying to make points with some other people. That's my opinion. So I it's unfortunate. They need somebody to take charge. Again, I blame Tony plenty for this. You know, he could have nipped this in the bud a while ago, but I don't, you know, he may end up getting himself fired, CM Punk, but I wouldn't do it over this just because it's, you're rewarding some bad behavior that I don't think was just out of nowhere and just some weird coincidence.
Yeah. Okay. Zach in Texas has an opinion on this. Turns out I'm going to have to watch tonight's show on delay, but I wanted to write in and address this Punk situation and defend Jack Perry for a second. Perry said what he said based on Brian Alvarez's, now I believe discredited or misunderstood, multi-sourcing report backing up Miro's tweet saying it didn't happen. Punk immediately got in Perry's face when he came into Gorilla and instigated a physical attack. Tony Khan witnessed the entire thing. To me, this investigation is a formality. The fact that Punk is such a man-child and people have to walk on eggshells so as not to offend his fragile ego is in and itself a problem. If Punk hadn't started a fight, we wouldn't even be talking about what Jack Perry said. That's not true. I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell we see Punk at All Out. And frankly, TK needs to cut bait altogether. So another one saying, blaming Punk for starting the fight. I would be talking about Jack Perry, maybe not at this moment and maybe not as much as we, yeah. I'm sure not as much as we talked about this, but I mean, as soon as Jack Perry said that, I put in my written report at pwtorch.com on All In that's the last thing, you know, they needed is Jack, you know, poking the bear, instigating drama when it's supposed to be the biggest night of AW's history and a celebration. And I don't, you know, Jack Perry decided to make his receipt a priority over Harmony, and it was petty and immature and a mistake. And I'm curious. I have heard nothing about how he feels about this. You know, Anyway, Dan.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason CM Punk had to apologize for the stuff with Hangman Page, and not for the stuff with Ryan Nemeth. It's the same thing both ways. You have to treat people higher up than you differently. And you have to do that in every – I mean, this is a job. Like, this is not – most of us have to do that in the real world, too. You know, sometimes you need to kind of know your place. And it is different for different people. That may not be fair, but that's reality. And, again, I would argue that Perry's more at fault between the two, given the entire situation.
Totally. Julian from London says, I'm the first to criticize AEW, but I think some of the chaos around All In means we're in danger of missing what a success it was. I thought they'd be lucky to fill half the stadium, much less sell it out. On Monday, the news that AEW was returning to London next year was on the front page of the BBC News website. That's a level of mainstream attention AEW's never had this side of the Atlantic. Despite a short build and criticism of the card, it seems to have been universally well-received, and the crowd loved it. It must be so frustrating for Tony Khan to see a major success undermined by backstage nonsense again. And again, this would not have happened if Jack Perry didn't look into the camera and make unauthorized, immature, unneeded comments, no matter how he feels about Punk. And, you know, Punk is not an angel in this. And he, even his friends will say, you know, they wish he handled these situations differently. This is not blind defense of Punk by any means, or blanket defense. But come on, it's just... Jack Perry, bad, bad, bad call. And it could be career altering. I mean, it really could be career altering for Jack Perry. This could define him in a way. We'll see. And that depends on a lot of things we don't know about him, you know, in terms of, is this a last straw or is this a innocent sort of, you know, dopey kid who doesn't understand the business, not knowing the context of what's happening and not having an appreciation for the moment. And they're like, well, we need to, you know, pull him aside, but you know, he's a good kid. Ultimately he just made a mistake. Or is it the flip side of that? And you know, that's going to be ultimately up to Tony Khan and also how Jack Perry responds to this, you know, how he's handling all the pushback on it. Dan, anything you want to add on that?
No, I think, you know, I hope I don't come across as this huge CM Punk defender. I mean, he's not perfect by any means, but we see things pretty well the same way on this, I think.
Yeah. All right, JB. From Detroit, says, I really liked Orange Cassidy video promo tonight, had a very serious tone, and Cassidy did a great job reviewing his journey with the international title and how he'll continue to fight for it. Story coming out of the show is Orange Cassidy being the focus, you know, Mr. Reliable, You know, I said it earlier, Tony Khan's a fan. I'd heard a little bit going into the show that this you know, that they were going to do something with Orange Cassidy to try to heat him up for pay-per-view. I had no idea they were going to do this. You know, we knew he was a focus. It's like the only thing they announced for the show. So in that sense, it was sort of natural to talk about it, that they were going to put something into it. But, yeah, that show, closing scene with Moxley and Cassidy cutting a promo, it was a good night for Orange. And, you know, Orange and Moxley to the rescue, two people Tony can rely on.
Absolutely. And callers mentioned this earlier, and the logical expectation is for there to be a title change. I don't think there has to be. I mean, Orange Cassidy's overcome odds a lot before. And if he successfully defends the title, I'm not saying that he has to do either, but either finish, I think, makes for kind of, you know, again, it's not the main event that I expected, but given that it is the main event, I think either story makes sense.
Yeah. All right, number two from JB, is it a taking battle royal on Rampage, 2 days out from All Out with a significantly smaller audience of Dynamite, really going to be good enough to build what will presumably be one of the bigger matches for All Out? I mean, anything with MJF and Cole will be one of the bigger matches, but it's not going to be. It's on Rampage for a reason. There's not a major tag team. They're not going to spend an MJF Cole big match with one show to promote it. You know, that's something Rich and I talked about, and Nick Houseman and I talked about. There's big matches they could put on the show, but they're not going to hotshot them, and they shouldn't. They should just bite the bullet that this is going to be a test case in terms of how low can a buy rate be.
Yeah, and there's a couple things I liked about them not hot-shotting Wade. For one, they had the interview with Cole and MJF. It was good. And, hey, we're going to wrestle somebody on Sunday. You know, if you included the Dark Order in that equation, does that really move the needle? I don't think so. I mean, the show is them being on the show wrestling as ROH Tag Team Champions against somebody that's a reasonable, not just jobbers. So I think that part's fine. I did like they didn't pull the trigger on Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. They're letting that story build slowly wherever it goes. And maybe I was a little worried they were going to feel compelled to put their match on All Out. And I like better that there's a slow build wherever they're going to go there, whether it be a breakup or tag team champions or whatever it's going to be with those guys. So I liked a couple different situations where they could have rushed things, and that's not going to add more than a couple hundred pay-per-view buys anyway, if even that. So there's no reason to do it.
All right. Up next on JB's list, adding to the last point, next week on Dynamite starts a world title eliminator to decide who will challenge MJF for the AW title at Grand Slam. AW is far too reliant on arbitrary battle royals and tournaments to decide incredibly important things like big title matches on pay-per-views and world title opponents. They're also boxing themselves into an unnecessary booking corner by scheduling three huge events in less than a one-month period. So I assume Cole wins, and it leads to, you know, some tension. But they could go a different direction. You know, Punk's suspended, so he's not going to be in the tournament in all likelihood, unless it's a two-week suspension and he shows up in 3 weeks. I guess there's a chance of that. But does he want to be in a tournament for a title shot when he thinks he's a real world champion anyway? So that doesn't make sense. And I just don't ever read on how much. I mean, if Punk apologizes to Khan towards Perry, inflaming the situation instead of being the veteran who turns his back and walks away, if he's really contrite and what's the word I'm looking for?
Sincere.
Apologetic.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it can make things better. But I don't know. I don't know where TK's head is at. I know there's people in that company who think Punk pushed too far and it's just one time too many. So, yeah, Dan, what do you think? What are the options of that would make sense? Not for a pay-per-view, but for a special episode of Dynamite. Yeah.
Yeah, but New York City, Arthur Ashe Stadium, Eddie Kingston.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's...
But do fans boo MJF, or do they cheer MJF in a meta way for, you know, quote, giving an opportunity to Kingston, even though, you know, in a storyline sense, Eddie earned it?
I haven't thought it through, Wade. You're just asking the name.
My reaction to you naming it is, what if do they want MJF booed in New York by putting him against somebody who's really popular?
No, that's a good point. But, I mean, that just to me, like, he needs to get that platform at some point, and I think New York City is the place to do it. This is not the first time someone suggested it. So you were saying who else is viable other than Cole. I mean, he jumps out at me because I've thought this is a situation that he deserves for some time.
I also, well, JB has another person who I think also should be in the conversation. I'll read his take here.
Sure.
I don't think they've been altered by the Punk Perry incident at All In, but outside of Colin Punk, who even makes sense to face MJF at Grand Slam? Who can be built in a two-week period between next week's Dynamite and Grand Slam? Will MJF versus Roderick Strong be a big enough match, as some of that story has already been told? I wouldn't rule out Roderick Strong. I mean, he declared himself. He's doing the best and also most awkward and cringy promos of his career.
Yeah.
He's been bland all along, but there's something kind of charming and appealing about him being so intense and emotionally worked up. I'm into this a little bit more. I think they can do MJF and Roderick Strong, and that's certainly the hint they gave tonight, Dan.
Yeah, no, I was going to mention that one also. Yeah, certainly want you to think that. So you can do a lot worse. It's compelling. I kind of like this story generally. So yeah.
Five. How's Mojo versus Shane Taylor in AEW pay-per-view match? Has Taylor literally ever been on an AEW proper television before that promo tonight? Yeah, Dan, they shouldn't. Joe doesn't need to be on the show. I mean, Tony's in a tough spot. I mean, you know, I'm not saying Mulligan because some of it is doing for back, you know, booking these back-to-back, and then I would give him even more slack if he didn't go ahead and do the same thing next year at this point and say, yeah, we'll make it work. But still, Shane Taylor, I mean, at least they had him cut a promo, but wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I was I don't know. I mean, if you find the proper challenger, having Joe on the show is perfectly fine, but this is more filler, in my opinion. And I'm just looking at it from someone that's an AEW television viewer. I'm not saying that Shane Taylor's all that bad or anything, but
right.
The general audience is just going to go, what? This is pay-per-view? Okay, maybe.
I mean, in a way, it pulls the pay-per-view down by having someone on it who nobody knows. Who,
yeah.
Not nobody, you know what I mean. It's sort of saying, yeah, we're throwing scraps on here to fill time.
Yeah.
JB says that Takeshita Kalis backstage segment breaking down striking strategies to take advantage of Kenny's history of back injury seems reminiscent of the Seth Rollins Nakamura storyline over on Raw. I agree with that. Did you like the video segment, the scouting report with Kalis?
It wasn't for Kalis. It was a little below par, but I mean, it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Takeshita's body language and facial expressions were kind of. Yeah, we're good. He's making a better heel than we thought. Okay,
yeah.
Finally, this wasn't a bad episode in a vacuum, but it didn't feel like much of a follow-up or go-home show for a big pay-per-view. They didn't really highlight or add anything big from either pay-per-view. What will Main Event All Out? This seems more like a themed episode of Dynamite rather than a pay-per-view. I have a feeling Grand Slam will be a bigger show. The OC babyface promo after the main event makes me think Cassidy and Mox for the title will Main Event. All Out. Yes, JB, we said that. I agree with you. That seems to be where they're headed. Anything else you want to add, Dan, to that?
Not that. I have a couple general comments, but nothing big.
Yeah, so go ahead and anything we haven't covered that you want to bring up before we sign off here.
You know, I mentioned that I liked the Tony Storm thing. I mentioned I liked the Jericho segment fairly well. I didn't like and I guess maybe they did this for every match, but maybe you don't have to put up the record. When you put up Commander 1-7 at the very start of the show,
yeah.
I'm just like, I remember the Jack Hart thing, the Barry Horowitz when he was in Florida and he was 0-140 or whatever. And then he finally cheated to win a match. And I'm like, you know, just put his name up there. If he's 1-7, you know, say you forgot the graphic or the Krylon or whatever. I didn't care for that. And, you know, I will say another factor on this pay-per-view, and I guess, the Sunday of Labor Day, this is always going to be true, but Louisiana State, Florida State, Sunday night's a big-time college football game, and a lot of people will be interested in that, so it's not going to help already kind of a less than overwhelmingly exciting pay-per-view lineup.
Wow. All right. Dan, thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation once again.
Always do, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all the caller participation, both on-site correspondents, our emailers, and our listeners. Keep spreading the word. If you like this show and you listen to the end, so you probably do, spread the word on social media, on Reddit, wherever you know there are wrestling fans, and tell them to search Wade Keller and subscribe. On that note, until next time, Wade Keller thanking you, encouraging you to check out the flagship with Nick Houseman that dropped last night on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed, the Blue Logo Show. We talked a lot about Punk in that situation, Houseman very close to that situation too, and many other topics, including payback. Or is it Backlash? I keep getting them interchanged. Whatever's coming up Saturday night, I keep getting heat from people. Whatever WWE's doing. All right. Thanks, and we'll talk to you all next time.